welcome to the Press Start Podcast, Press Start Australia's weekly video game discussion podcast. I'm your host, Ewan, joined today by my fellow gamers and co-hosts, Shannon.
Hello.
Harry.
Hello.
And James.
Hello.
Today, we're going to be talking about a leaked Spider-Man multiplayer game trailer, platform exclusivity, some more Summer Games Fest coming back, and new content coming to Prince of Persia and Helldivers 2. But first, let's talk about Rise of the Ronin. Harry, you're the special guest on today's show because you had the opportunity to preview the game. What has been your impression of Rise of the Ronin thus far?
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. It kind of feels a little bit like an amalgamation of all of Team Ninja's recent titles, like stretching back to Neo, so their Souls-like catalogue, I guess. I think that, like, it does a lot of really interesting things in, like, an open-world framework and things like that. If you haven't played a Team Ninja game before, it's a good one to jump into, I think. It's got difficulty settings, and it's generally more approachable because there's, like, stealth elements and things like that. But I will say that I think a lot of people expecting it to be something it's not. It's definitely not Ghost of Tsushima. There are some like pretty surface level comparisons to Sekiro, but it feels more of like a Souls like Assassin's Creed, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. I guess like in differentiating from those two games, because obviously those are the two that everyone kind of immediately drew parallels with having seen the game. Like, what is it sort of bringing to the table that's kind of new or interesting or different in, like, does it stand alongside those games but in different ways?
I think it's it more stands alongside Team Ninja's previous games. Like, it very much feels like a Team Ninja game, and the way it's so different from like Wolong and Neo and Stranger of Paradise, if you've played those, is that it's like full open world. All the like previous games have been very mission based. So you sort of have like a hub area or whatever, and you launch into linear missions. Whereas here, it's very much open world with open world activities. You can ride on horseback, glide. You've got a grappling hook and stuff. There's like outposts. It's like a very Ubisoft style open world. And then there are like linear missions sort of interspersed throughout the main story progression, but they are much more constrained in scope than like the linear missions from their previous games. So yeah, if you sort of think like a Ubisoft style open world, and then which I guess is kind of where Assassin's Creed is now, but with like a Souls-like combat framework that is probably most similar to like probably Neo, I would say.
It's interesting if like there is ever an Assassin's Creed game set in feudal Japan. I feel like they can have a real uphill battle now to differentiate
the
themselves.
The next one is meant to be.
Yeah, like we've talked about it everywhere for the last year.
To be fair. Yeah,
I don't know. To be fair,
no defense. I rest my case.
Yes, I do forget that. I've still got Hexy in my mind. Is it? It's Red that's the next Assassin's Creed game, isn't it?
Codename Red.
That's the rumor.
Codename Red.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing that like Rise of Ronin sort of has over like, well, not has over Ghost of Tsushima, but where it's different and will probably be different from Codename Red is like, feudal Japan is like really ripe for this sort of thing. Like, there are so many periods you can have games set in. Like, Neo and Neo 2 are set in two very different periods of Japan's history. And this game is different from those also. So I think
based on what you've got to experience so far in the preview, is the story of interest as well? Were you getting
I'd say it very much opens in a way that I didn't expect, in like a good way. Like, the hook was definitely there for me. It shifts its focus a little bit on that sort of that core question you have to its characters and the world and like the turmoil that it's going through. So if you don't know, the game is set in the Bakumatsu period, which is when Japan came out of seclusion and the West started sort of making themselves known, bringing their own cultures in. So it was a real time of like turmoil and cultural clash as the Westerners tried to bring their ways of life over to the East and things like that. So aside from like what's going on with your main character, which I don't think is like, wouldn't want to spoil that for anyone here, but you also have like the conflict of the era going on, where you have people who are pro shogunate and anti shogunate and people who want the Westerners to come in and people who maybe don't. And so it's kind of about which side you fight for. And Team Ninja's sort of own interpretation of that conflict. So,
slightly unrelated, but have you watched the Disney Plus series?
I haven't.
It sounds like it's a similar... I haven't.
I think it is the same time period, but I'm not familiar with the show. So,
I think just because it's set in feudal Japan. I wondered if it was a similar time period, though.
I think there's still,
with Red especially, there's a lot of opportunity to, like... There's different eras in that time
period. They'll be very different, I think.
Which, like, I feel like you mentioned this in your preview, Harry, but, like, it's obviously with Wolong and Neo, a lot of demonic shit. Is this anything like that? Is there any kind of supernatural stuff, or is it more?
No. This game is very, very grounded, which, yeah, James is right. Like, the Neo 2, while they've been set in, like, true historical periods, and Wolong is set in, like, the Han Dynasty in China, but they always are, like, they have a supernatural twist, almost like their alternate timeline. So Neo has yokai and Wolong has demons. There's none of that in Rise of the Ronin, at least so far in the preview window. It's completely grounded. No demons, no supernatural elements, which, yeah, is... I don't know if that's a first for Team Ninja, because they have a very extensive catalogue, but at least stretching back to Neo and their Souls-like games, it feels very different in that regard.
Shannon, you've got the opportunity to play some as well, I believe, as kind of part of this preview. Does your kind of experience of it line up with Harry so far? Have you been enjoying it?
I think so. I think Harry and I are quite different gamers. Like, I've tried most of the Souls games, like a few Dark Souls, Elden Ring, Sekiro, but like, yeah, normally I'll make it through the first, like, couple of areas and then get to the first big boss and bail out. But, yeah, I didn't feel that with this for... it just didn't feel as tough to me. It's open world, so if you do hit that area, an area that you can't get past, you can just do something else, which Elden Ring was good for that as well, at certain parts. And obviously you can tone the difficulty down at any given moment. And they're just, again, Harry would know better than me, but they felt to be more checkpoints. Like, when I was dying, it didn't feel as brutal. It felt like I was just a few steps back, and then I could get through that area the next time or the time after that. And I'm sure it does ramp up over time, but it felt more accessible to me. I will say, like, the story and the fact that there weren't supernatural elements, like, that's what appeals to me about most of these other games in this genre, and this doesn't have that. And to be honest, Ghost of Tsushima was the same. Like, that didn't grab me. Like, of all the big PlayStation games of the last, like, 5 years, like, that was the one I did fall off. And this was the same for that reason. Like, the story just didn't appeal. It did have that kind of Team Ninja jank. Like, it was a bit jarring to me, like, seeing the PlayStation Productions, PlayStation Studios start screen and then Team Ninja and then seeing how the game looked. And it doesn't look bad, but I don't know, like, As we've seen the tweet, like, PlayStation games have an extra level of care that it is taken off Team Ninja. It has that Japanese jank, and it's not bad. It works, but I don't know. Well, I reckon a lot more people get into this than previous Team Ninja games, though. I can see a lot more people that jump in because they might like Assassin's Creed or Ghosts into this and actually having a good time with it.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where my interest level is at this point. Like, I love Ghosts, and I kind of find this period of history, although I don't know terribly much about it, like, kind of fascinating. I'm keen to kind of give it a go on that sort of premise alone.
I think you'd like it.
Yeah, I haven't really... Yeah, we've established before on the podcast that I haven't really kind of connected with Souls games in the past, and Team Ninja games I haven't. I think even if you have an aversion to
Souls games, like, you can sort of liken it to Elden Ring in that it's very accessible. Like, as far as Team Ninja games go, like, Shannon's right, there are checkpoints everywhere. You're constantly getting health refills. And, like, I'm playing on the normal difficulty, which feels like their standard challenge. But I did drop down to, like, the easy level to see what that was like, and it feels much easier and much more approachable if you're maybe apprehensive about it being a Souls-like. So
yeah,
and you can change it at any time. Like,
I think the problem with it is, like, in the past, is it's just become too time consuming than, like, what I'm willing to kind of give it. Just lack the patience, that sort of thing. So yeah, like, some of those kind of quality of life experiences sound good. If I can just kind of experience the game as a whole, that'd be excellent. Yeah. James, are you pretty excited for this one?
No. There's other games in I'm having this with Rebirth at the moment too. Like I feel like while some these games haven't had that kind of open world experience, it's a format that I'm already quite tired of in a way, like, you know, and like just putting that into, say, like, you know, the world of Final Fantasy or like, say, a feudal Japanese setting doesn't magically make me interested in it all of a sudden. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's how I feel about that.
On that note, I was enjoying this more before it opened up and got to the title. Like, not enjoying it, but I don't know, I just felt like I was moving in a direction.
It feels more focused early on, I think.
And then it opened up and I was like, oh, like, I can't be bothered doing all this side stuff, to be honest. I was enjoying when I was being pushed in a direction.
I feel like this is also Team Ninja's first open world game.
I'm pretty sure it is. Like, I mean, technically Ninja Gaiden 1 is, but like, it's not really.
It's more level based.
Yeah, in that you can go where you want, but this is like their first like full open world.
Sorry, James, go for it.
I just feel like they're like a little bit late to the party there, but I do appreciate that this will probably be their most viewed game. Like, most more eyes will be on this game than anything they've ever made before, I think, besides maybe Ninja Gaiden. But I mean, I've got other things coming up, I think, as well. So
I'll actually be in
Japan when it comes out. So just walk around Kyoto for a bit and get the same experience.
Maybe you'll come back like really itching to kind of play it, having read like all the plaques at the museums and stuff.
Maybe I want to go back, but I don't have the money. I'll just buy Rise of the Ronin.
I'm curious, given it is an open world game, like can you just kind of mainline it and power through the story missions as much as you can?
You definitely can. I feel like it doles out like XP and level progression enough that you probably could, especially on the easy mode. But the open world content is like very digestible. It's all quite short form. There are side quests and stuff which are longer. But like, if you come across an outpost, it's kind of like one of those open worlds where if you stumble onto something, you might as well do it because it's only going to take you a couple minutes. And then, you know. So I think a good way to play it is, if you don't want to do all the open world stuff, is just you can golden path it and then do the stuff that you find along the way, I guess, to make sure you don't fall too under level. But yeah, I mean, on the easy difficulty and the stealth and things like that, there's so many new inclusions in this that make it easier than ever to get into. So
cool. I reckon, I'm going to spend some time with Final Fantasy VII Rebirth this weekend, I think, finally. I've been putting that off for too long. Helldivers has been too much of a distraction, I'll admit. Maybe Rise of the Ronin. It's out next week, isn't it?
So, the 22nd, next Friday.
Next week, and I can have a bit of a dabble with the two then. Excellent. Well, sticking with PlayStation exclusives for a moment longer, let's speak about one that could have been, as a trailer has emerged online, it's been doing the rounds this kind of past week or so, of a cancelled Spider-Man multiplayer game. It was mentioned in the leaks kind of post-Insomniac hack last year, but this previously unseen trailer shows off up to 5 players roaming around New York together and sets up what appears to be a multiverse-hopping adventure with Spider-Gwen even, a playable character among other multiple versions of Spider-Man and Venom as well, a playable character too. Shannon, I guess given the recent struggles of Suicide Squad that we've spoken about at length on the podcast now, were Insomniac right to cancel this style of game, do you think?
It's kind of hard to say without playing it. Like, no trailer's going to look bad. To the point you can make that assumption. But, like, from what we know of Spider-Man and, like, it's combat and open world, I can't imagine that not being fun with playing with other people, right? Like, that would be hugely fun, being able to swing around and just take on missions. I guess, the thing that maybe why they cancelled it is, like, I can imagine they didn't want to oversaturate the market, like, when Spider-Man is probably PlayStation's biggest franchise at the moment in the gaming space, so that could be what went through their head. But I can't imagine, like, if this was just, like, a 10-15 hour experience, again, we know nothing about it really outside of the trailer and a few other bits, it not selling well and it not being a fun time, like, given it, I'm sure it was just a shorter experience. I don't think so. I'm surprised that it's cancelled. Like, seeing how good this trailer was and like how polished it was, it looked like something that could be announced and dropped tomorrow.
Yeah, it kind of does look like the kind of thing that would have popped off in like an E3 presentation or the like, but whether or not that kind of translated into the final experience that we might then dream it could be. I suppose we'll never know now. But I wonder if it is kind of a situation similar to like Naughty Dog, and that it would have strayed kind of too far from who they, what their identity as a studio is now, and they kind of didn't want to go down that road. Because as soon as you do a live service Spider-Man game, do you not kind of get those big like tentpole releases anymore, perhaps?
Yeah. Do we know that it was live service? I can't even remember from the leak. I didn't look.
Well, no. I guess I probably am.
It's just rumored that it was multiplayer, but I think.
For me, like I could have seen this just being an expansion or something that build. But then it is a big undertaking to build like a multiplayer component into that world, right? Like you're not just doing it in a few months. But like I could have seen this being an expansion or like a $20 thing to Spider-Man 2, and that would have been cool.
Yeah, particularly as you got the kind of two Spider-Men in the game already, I guess it would just be layering upon that.
If it was live service and that, like, it was a full undertaking, like The Last of Us was, then, yeah, I could see them realizing, like, let's not go down that path with this title.
What do you make of it, Harry? Would you have an appetite for a cooperative Spider-Man game?
I really think it depends on, like, the framework of it. I think, like Shannon said, if it was a $20 expansion, like, if you liken it to, like, Ghost of Tsushima Legends or something... I think it would have sold really well and people would have eaten it up. But if it was built to be live service, I don't think it would have succeeded. I think a lot of people would have bought and played it on day one. But there are too many like question marks with content delivery, and Insomniac are also known for, like, they've got Wolverine and Spider-Man 3 in the pipeline alongside other things. And like you said, how does that impact development? Like, I think there's too many variables, but if it was meant to be just like a one and done game that you can play with up to five friends, I think I would really would have liked to see it, and I think it would have done really well. But I mean, knowing PlayStation's recent strategy and the way things have been going with live service, if that was the avenue they were taking it, I don't think it would have done well for them in the long term.
I very much kind of like the trajectory that Insomniac are on at the moment. Like, I love everything they've done with the Spider-Man series so far, and I'm excited to see what Wolverine ends up being. And yeah, I kind of, as much as this live service strategy kind of seems to be maintained in some sort of capacity, albeit maybe in a scaled back sort of way, I kind of hope we get these, I want to kind of say like top tiered development studios, but maybe that's entirely subjective. But your Insomniacs, your Naughty Dogs, your Sucker Punch to an extent, kind of continuing to make these kind of franchise tentpole single player kind of story driven games. To add another element to it though, I wanted to touch on exclusivity once more, and quote the former PlayStation executive Sean Layden, who spoke to GamesBeat in the week and said, when your costs for a game exceed $200 million, exclusivity is your Achilles heel in a free-to-play world. As we know, 95% of those people will never spend a nickel. The business is all about conversion. You have to improve your odds by cracking the funnel open. James, to loop you in, like Xbox, do you think PlayStation be considering to shift away from platform exclusivity?
I don't think so. I don't think so beyond PC, which obviously that's probably a stupid answer because that's what they're doing. But I don't personally think so. I think they probably should, if to combat the rising costs of their game development. Like, we know that that's a concern for them internally from the Insomniac leaks and such. Because, I mean, like, we were saying here a few weeks before, like, Sea of Thieves, like, that's not the game that everyone's going to love on PlayStation, but it's topping charts on PlayStation already. So, like, we're wrong. But, like, I can imagine for these games that are, like, critically and commercially successful, that could maybe benefit from being on Xbox or Switch. I mean, it's just more money for them in the pocket, right?
I think, like, Switch in particular, like, there's a huge install base there, and
I also think what suits Switch that's on PS5, right? Like,
maybe in the not too distant future, if the Switch 2 is as powerful as we hope it'll be.
Like, so many of the games that Japan Studio used to make, say, like, the Gravity Rush games or anything like that, they would all be perfect candidates for Switch ports.
And they would sell so well.
They would, Ape Escape, absolutely.
Right, fit on Switch.
If you're into that. Medieval. Yeah, I can see all that stuff doing really well on Switch. But I don't think Sony will do that. I feel like they are in a very comfortable position at the moment, and I don't think they want to mess that up too much.
Yeah, I think hence, for the most part,
why they're stopping their multiplayer focus as well. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I think for the most part, you're right, that it'll be predominantly be PC ports. And I like that some of those are kind of coming about quicker and even like day and date. Like, I think that's been very successful for Helldivers, and that's kind of paid dividends given the kind of viral success, I suppose, that game has been and how successful it's been on Steam. Yeah, I don't know, like, what... Say, go back to Rise of the Ronin and kind of Spider-Man. Has Spider-Man 2 come to PC now? The others have, right?
I think there's a rumor it's getting announced soon.
Yeah.
But nothing official just yet.
It wouldn't surprise me if we kind of start to see a bit more like... a bit more of a regiment to the release of the PC games. Because I feel like it's kind of been a bit sporadic, and, you know, maybe it's 12 months later, maybe it's 3 years later, maybe it just, like, never happens. But I reckon we'll kind of start to... they'll start to establish a bit more of a rhythm there based on...
Yeah, I think Rise of the Ronin absolutely will come to PC. Like, both of the Neo games did. And they were PlayStation exclusive as well.
Yeah, yeah. And Bloodborne? Who knows?
It's also, I'm sure it's a development thing as well. Like, it'd be, it'd add to, like, day and date.
Yeah.
And that is why Xbox studios do have, like, it is harder developing for both day one.
That's why they made some of these acquisitions, though, right? Like, your Nixes of the world and stuff.
It'll get quicker and faster, but, like, there is an actual challenge with doing day and date on both of the platforms.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. All right, well, speaking of impending announcements and what might be in store for us this year, Jeff Keighley has revealed the dates for Summer Games Fest 2024. It will again be held in person at the YouTube Theater in Los Angeles and streamed worldwide, obviously, too. It's going to kick off Saturday, June 8th at about 7 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. But I was a little unsure about that time because I think we put Australian Eastern Daylight Time in the article, so I could have that wrong, but let's check in nearer the time. I'm sure we'll have an article up with all the times and breakdowns. Harry, going to come to you first on this one. What do you expect from Summer Games Fest this year, and how might it differ to the kind of Games Fest that we've had in previous years?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, the second half of this year is looking very unknown. Like, we know stuff is coming, but, like, we don't really have... I mean, you have, like, Avowed. But there's also a lot of, like, really anticipated titles that we know are coming next year. I'm sure we'll see more on Avowed, probably get a release date for that. Codename Red, like, Ubisoft's new Assassin's Creed game. Because Valhalla came out, like, 4 years ago now, right? So, like, and Mirage was obviously smaller scale. Yeah, I presume we'll see Death Stranding stuff, Death Stranding 2. I don't know how much it will differ from, like, previous Summer Games Fests. I feel like they've landed on a pretty good format for how they present things and the titles that they've had there. Like, last year felt like a pretty good showing, but, yeah, I guess we'll see if they want to take it further.
Yeah, I feel like we had a ton of notes about how the Game Awards could kind of... Everyone had a ton of notes about how the Game Awards could be presented a bit differently. But I seem to remember Summer Games Fest going pretty well last year. I know the kind of
like
sponsorships
it was brisk
always...
for the amount of titles they had and stuff. Like,
yeah.
There was lots of relatively rapid reveals.
Yeah, maybe it was a touch on the long side, but I don't know if I'm getting them confused. James, how do you feel kind of going into Summer Games Fest later this year? Like, do you expect it to kind of be quieter? It's like Harry said, it does feel like a bit of a quieter year, but will we be seeing announcements for 2025 and beyond?
Yeah, I think we're in like a bit of a lull at the moment after having like a really strong year last year. So I think... I don't know. I would keep my expectations pretty low. Yeah. Like, I'm just, like, quickly scrolling through, like, last year's one, and there really wasn't, like, a lot of big stuff. Just quickly looking. Like, I know we got more gameplay of games we already knew about. The biggest surprise was really, like, Prince of Persia Forgotten Throne, I think. Yeah, I don't know. Oh, and the Rebirth. Oh, sorry, Final Fantasy fans. The first showing of Rebirth was also, right. I guess, quite a big deal. Maybe for some. Maybe, like, another Final Fantasy trailer. We could just live that news cycle for the rest of our lives. But, yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't expect a lot.
Do you think,
actually,
like,
I wouldn't
Xbox
be surprised
player?
If they dropped another trailer for the 16 DLC.
It's going to be, there's going to be a lot of hardware. I think we're going to see new Switch, PS5 Pro.
Well, all
Xbox
of that
refresh.
Revealed at Summer
I don't know
Games
this,
Fest.
But like in this period, like I'm speaking inclusive of like Xbox and whoever else is doing crap as a part of it. I think it's likely we'll see the new Xbox and the new PS5 maybe at this.
As in like the hardware's, Pro versions, you mean, yeah.
I think so.
Don't you reckon they would do their own thing though?
Yeah, but they could around the same period, right?
Well, Xbox loves a hardware announcement at Jeff Keighley stuff. So do PlayStation. I think they both like doing it there. Both would be weird, I think. Like, you'd have one or the other. But I think definitely one would be there. Nintendo, I don't even know what they're going to do anymore. Who knows?
Make a cake and take literally. A photo of it. And that will have everything you need to know on it. And tweet it on Saturday.
I'm hopeful, even though we've said this year will be light, that, like... I'm hopeful we'll start to see this next slate of games.
I do feel like every year, though, we say this the first half of the year, though. Like, the second half of the year is always empty.
Nah, I think it's going to be slower this year.
Well, yes, because of what we know about, like, the market. But normally, we are like, you know...
Yeah, well, this is where we normally find out everything.
Is it?
What we look forward to each and every year.
It is always a joy to stay up with Shannon.
Yeah. It's still not a sure thing, though, that you kind of get the abridged kind of release schedules. I don't know what I'm saying. Like, it's not still not commonplace for a game to be announced in June and kind of out by the end of the year. I feel like the kind of hype cycle still tends to be a little bit more elongated.
I feel like we're getting better
than that,
at that now, though, don't you? I feel like a lot of games coming out within 6 months of being announced.
I'd say progress has been made, but I wouldn't say it's commonplace yet. Like, for us to have a kind of bang in half of this year, you'd expect, like, a fair few announcements to happen with, like, pretty imminent release later this year. I would like that to happen, because I think it means more to kind of look forward to in the short term. But
I think Capcom have been really good at that, like, bar a couple of exceptions. Like, almost all of their games have been announced and came, like, they come out within...
Which do a Resident Evil announce, I feel. This could be the one.
Nah, we'll just get like a Pragmata delay announcement, I think.
It's not happening.
Yeah. Nah, Resident Evil would be good. I've said it before. I feel like this is not going to be a Resident Evil year at all. Mm. Although Capcom, in the past, once they put out their gold edition or whatever, which I think happens in a month for RE4, they go full speed ahead on the next game.
I could see it announced for next year, early next year release, mid-next year release. RE5, lots of discourse around that as well, isn't there?
Oh, that already doesn't even exist yet.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. Yeah. I'm going to really enjoy living in that period of time online. I can see Sony doing some kind of, like, that would be like a really good pro game. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like there would be some kind of deal there. Of some sort, where it's like better on pro or something.
They'll lock you in with that, won't they?
No, they won't.
Capcom have Monster Hunter Wilds as well, though. And I think that's going to be one of their really big launches next year.
I think the monsters are back.
This is real monsters. The monsters.
Yeah, monsters is stories, Shannon.
Yeah,
it's monsters in the regular ones. Monsters is this year.
Yeah, it's like June or something. But I think let's just say it. Resi, sure. Anyway, it's the predictions episode. We should probably move on.
Well, we don't have to predict about what is coming the way of Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown, because Ubisoft Montpellier have came and spelled it all out for us with a handy little roadmap of post-launch content, with the first update dropping March 20th. The first is going to add a speedrun mode and a permadeath mode, which I am not going to partake in, and four new outfits for Sargon, with two more updates there for after, including a boss attack mode and a divine trials mode containing combat, platform, and puzzle challenges. I imagine kind of like the little kind of taste you get in sections of the game. James, I'm going to come back to you first on this one, I think. What post-release content were you expecting for this game, if any? Is this a pleasant surprise?
None. Because, like, you know, they came out and said it was kind of disappointing for them, which sucked because it was a really
good game.
Yes, they did.
Okay. I wondered how this is done.
Underperformed. So.
Underperformed or something.
Right.
Yeah, so I was surprised to see this stuff, but I'm also happy. So...
Yeah.
You know? It's interesting that it's all free stuff except for the last thing, which is paid DLC, like story stuff. So
yeah.
I think it's cool. Like it's kind of admirable. It's also weird to think that there's, I thought this game would have microtransactions by now, like patched in, but there's nothing.
Mm.
So yeah, cool.
It,
great.
Certainly with like the costumes and stuff, it could have hinted
absolutely
at that being,
they could
a
have
thing,
done
right?
all this
and I think
dumb
like amulets
shit.
Are going to be added like, into, yeah. yeah.
I feel
yeah.
like they could have done so much shit with this.
Make Sargon look like Rayman.
Yeah, or yeah, or a minion, or like a, not a minion, a rabbit, or a minion too.
A rabbit.
Do a crossover God. With the minions. No, but rabbits as well, like gaming's minion. But yeah, I am happy about this, obviously. But I don't yeah. know. It's kind of annoying because I think they might add new trophies or achievements, and then I'll have to do them for permadeath and stuff.
Oh, so annoying. Oh, right. Yeah, it's okay. I would yeah. not be
so,
a fan of that.
Yeah, but well done, Ubi.
Harry, with it kind of underperforming commercially then, obviously it was quite the opposite critically. It was very well received. Do you think there's a chance we kind of get more games like this from Ubisoft? Or does
I
that
really
now depend
so.
On how...
Like, I really hope so. I think this game is, like, so good. And I'll be shocked if it isn't in some capacity nominated for something at the Game Awards.
Yeah.
It's just so fantastically designed. And, like, that team has put out some great stuff before, so that shouldn't really come as a surprise. But, yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say with Ubisoft. Like, it did get received critically really well, but Ubisoft will do what they do. And, I mean, if they don't want to pursue more of that, then, you know, maybe they'll pivot to something else. But I think if nothing else, it's really cool that, you know, they're at least acknowledged that there are people that do really enjoy the game and that there is more content coming. Yeah. Because, I mean, they could so easily just say, oh, it's not going to be a thing anymore. And, yeah. So, at least, maybe that is a sign of
they,
things to
I would
come.
Actually,
I hope it is.
They did this for, like, they didn't really support Extraction, like Rainbow Six for long. And that's a game that kind of is designed for that kind of support.
Yeah,
so,
like, it was built to be quasi-life yeah, service.
For
right?
them to like, support a game like this in a bigger way is, like, quite good.
So. And maybe they'd want to because of the critical reception. So, I don't know. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that also will greenlight a sequel or another, you know, sort of traditional Prince of Persia game.
Or, like, fast-paced the development of Prince of Persia Remake as well. Who knows?
I really hope we do get more like it. I have really enjoyed this game. I think it's kind of firmly at the top of my list at the moment for my favorite game of this year. And granted, that's not saying terribly much. Like, we're barely into March. But yeah, I'm kind of still hopeful this game does well award season and it kind of gets increased interest, I suppose, like throughout the year and around that sort of time too. Like, I think it's recently had a bit of a price cut. I feel like I had a friend pick it up recently. He said it was on sale and I think I've seen it kind of like down $50, in places at the moment too. So hopefully things like that kind of get some traction and maybe some pale D&C and stuff makes it more of a commercial success.
I could see it coming to Game Pass or something at some point and maybe they'll recoup some money there as well. Maybe.
Yeah. 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 That's a good point.
Yeah. I think if nothing else, like, it should at least hopefully save it from being forgotten come end of the year, like most games that come out early and, you know, review really well do. So, yeah.
That'll be the test, right? If it's still kind of front of mind towards the end of the year or so hard for a game that comes out so early. All right. Well, speaking of games that are getting updates, I'm curious what you all make of Helldivers in the way that they're rolling out new content. I don't know, James, I know you were playing a bit of Helldivers around launch. I don't know if you're kind of still sticking with it. You're giving me a confused look.
Cause I played,
I got that wrong.
Like, I downloaded it and played about two matches. I think Shannon played more.
Really?
And Brody, Brody and I played it together.
Okay, cool. Well, if you've not been keeping up with it, recently players liberated a planet and they all got unlocked exosuits, I think kind of temporarily, and then it got added as like a permanent unlock at level 25. And kind of just unannounced, they've added flying bugs as a new enemy type in the, like, the last 24 hours or so, which I think is really neat. Shannon, how fresh an approach to a live service game is this? Like, do you kind of like this model?
Yeah, I do. I think, like I've spoken about, like, you'd rather just put it all on the table rather than hold things back and see the player count drop. And I think they've gone on the record, like, in saying that they didn't expect this to do anywhere near as well as it had. So I'm sure they have moved stuff up to just keep that momentum. I don't know if player numbers are still going up, but it doesn't feel like they've dropped significantly just based on how many people are talking about it still. So yeah, I think it's good that they've had this. This is what you need for live service to do well, like a bank of content that's genuinely changing things, like the dynamic things happening in game, yeah, the flying creatures, the mechs, like they're all adding significant things to a game that's already popping off.
What I do like about it as well is, like, as opposed to kind of Suicide Squad or like Avengers, or I guess those first to come to mind, where you've kind of got to get through like a single play or like a story before
happening.
That kind of world opens up. Like, yeah, you're Fortnite. Just in it from the get go and kind of in it with everyone else. And yeah, I like the way that it's so dynamic and you kind of feel part of this weird community defending Super Earth.
People are loving it. Like, I played it a lot that 3 or 4 day period, but I haven't really felt hugely compelled to, like, this stuff has made me think about it.
Yeah.
Wanting to go back. But yeah, some people are hundreds of hours in.
Yeah, I guess more to the point, I do love this kind of sporadic drip feeding of content. And I think it makes kind of so much sense for it to kind of launch at a lower price point, kind of be a little bit simple, and I actually sort of feel like they kind of maybe held one or two things back so they could kind of play some early cards from their sleeve. And yeah, I kind of like the fun that they seem to be having in messing with the community as well.
Yeah,
Harry,
I don't know how long it lasts, but we'll see.
No, yeah, Harry, have you played any? Are you interested in diving in at all?
I haven't, if only because I've just been playing other stuff and reviewing things. But it's on the list. Like, I mean, I play a lot of Destiny, so live service games, when they're done well, I do enjoy. And, like, this looks... like, it just looks like a lot of fun. And I think the approach that they're taking to content updates and just dropping stuff and is, like, it's playing to the strengths of what live service lets you do. And I think there are so many games that approach this like business model or framework for a game and don't do interesting stuff like that. Like Destiny's been around for 10 years and there's been a few occasions where they've added stuff that they haven't previously outlined as a result of player actions. And those have always been the highlights of the community. So it's really cool to see Helldivers embrace that and like acknowledge that that is like sort of the strength of the genre. And I think it will do like so much for the longevity of the game. Like Shannon said, like, people are going to see that this stuff is happening and want to get back into it.
Hopefully they really can cool, really sustain cool. It wouldn't surprise me if, like, we're not too far away from there being a different species that starts attacking. Like, we've fought off the bugs and then the automatons. And, yeah, I reckon they've probably got other fronts that are going to open up. But curious to see how long it'll take for that to materialize. All right. I have a rapid fire question for you all, and it is that the next Super Mario Bros. Movie has been confirmed for a 2026 release, so a couple of years away, but an inevitability, I would say. James, what's your one hope for the film?
Waluigi's in it. There's some kind of tennis.
Someone was going to say it.
Tennis subplot.
A sports crossover.
Yeah, and like a tennis montage or something. And he's voiced by Danny DeVito.
it's a crossover with the Sonic movie franchise and they go to the Olympics.
That would be cool. Yeah, that would be really cool. Yeah, but anyway.
Shattered, what's yours?
I don't know. I'd like to see something just totally different. That's what it sounds like it's going to be. Just like all of Nintendo's characters or like a Nintendo land.
Yeah, I don't think it's just Mario, right?
Yeah, like I'd love to see something different and not just sort of, yeah, the same thing over and over again with a few more characters added. Like either a Yoshi movie or like Donkey Kong exclusively. But I don't know. Donkey Kong's a bit boring to me. Like a super... I don't know. I'd like to see them, yeah, start building out this multiverse that we've seen sort of teased.
Harry?
Yeah, I think sort of similar to what Shannon's saying. I'd love to see them do something Mario Galaxy adjacent. Bring in Rosalina. Bring in the Loomers and stuff.
Just expand on the world further.
Let's go to space. Why not?
All right. It is now time for What the Wiki, the Press Up podcast game show, where the previous week's winner reads part of a Wikipedia page for an unknown game, and we, the contestants, must guess the game. A point is awarded for each correct guess, with the round concluding after someone's bagged themselves 2 points. points as last week's winner. James will be in the hosting chair. He sits rather comfortably in first place at the moment on 12 points. You have to get down to 6 points to find Brody and Shannon tied in second place. I'm in third with 5, Kieran with 4, and Harry, yet to enter the scoring, nil pois. Hopefully you can bag yourself a point today. Mm-hmm. But James, the show is yours.
Okay, let's go. This game is a poker-themed roguelike with the aim of being to beat...
Harry. Balatro.
It is.
Wow. I knew the game immediately. I'm like, what is it called? Something starting with B. Harry, you got your point. Congrats.
I got my point.
Immediately.
You can stop now.
No, I didn't. Yeah.
Okay. In this game, the player assumes the role of a character who is pursuing another character. The game, a puzzle platforming game, plays similarly to... I didn't prep these properly. The game plays similarly to another Game Boy game, giving the main character a vast set of different athletic moves, including a handstand, a somersault, and a triple jump. There are several different environments, ranging from a lava environment to a classic construction site, and there are 5 different types. In the first, the most common, the main character has to pick up a key and take it to a locked door. In the second, the player must guide 6 mini characters to a toy box while protecting them from dangerous environments.
Shannon. Mario versus Donkey Kong.
It is Mario versus Donkey Kong. Shannon, congrats. You read through. I'm so sorry that was botched, but we'll go with that.
Thank you. We're just on the same wavelength.
Sometimes. Anyway, Harry won. Shannon won. Ewan, none. This game consists primarily of a series of puzzles that must be solved by teleporting the main player's character and other objects using Ewan. Something. Yes, Ewan.
Is it Portal?
It is Portal.
Yes!
Congratulations. I didn't have a third game, so...
Since he does not have a tiebreaker prepped. He's playing with fire.
Every time. Seriously. Okay, what's a game that we've all played? I'll just pick one.
I love, like, we listened to you preparing this kind of prior to the show, and you were, like, wrestling with ChatGPT or something to give you suggestions, and I have to imagine it gave you Portal, which is just...
Yeah, it did.
The most creative of suggestions.
Yeah. The power of AI. Yeah.
I will recap the scoring somewhat then, whilst you were doing that. Shannon has moved up into second place with the point that he's bagged so far. I've moved up into third, tied with Brody on 6 points. And Harry, yeah, entered the scoring on 1 point. No more nil pois for me, unfortunately. James is going to be away on holiday pretty soon, which gives us all kind of a bit of an opportunity to catch up. So I think we're going to have to think about how we evenly distribute the points in that time, Shannon. Close this gap somehow.
Let's go. This one, I'm actually not going to tell you that. You can work it out. I think we all know this game, though.
Okay.
The game is set in a building in New York City. I'm doing this on the fly. At the onset of the game, an entity is attempting to cross over through a dimensional barrier into reality and has taken over numerous parts of said building, reconfiguring its architecture as well as many of the employees to fight for it. The player controls a character.
Oh, Ewan.
Oh, Ewan.
Is this Control?
It is Control.
Let's
Ewan.
Go.
Oh,
I thought it was.
Congratulations.
I didn't realize it's New York.
I picked that because Remedy bought that back from 505.
They did too.
Interesting. What are they planning? Spend all their money, it seems.
Was there a theme until the last game?
There was no theme.
Really?
No. What
they
theme?
All felt like
they're all
games
in which someone obsessed over some insignificant detail that inflated up the production cost of the game.
We don't need to go into that.
With that, let's bring an end to what was this week's episode of the Press Start Podcast. Subscribe to us on Listener or the podcast service of your choice. Follow us at press.au and visit the site at press.com.au. We've been joined today by Harry.
Yeah, you can follow me at Harry_Callow.
do go and check out Harry's preview of Rise of the Ronin. Are you working on the review as well?
Yeah, the review will be live on the 21st.
Cool. Oh, awesome. Yeah. Also joining us today was Shannon. Oh, is he muted?
I don't know how I did that. You can follow me at Shannon Grixie on everything.
Doing a marvellous job hosting What the Wiki as well. It was James.
My best work yet. Absolutely. Well,
you get the extra praise things I want.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can find me on X at James, @JamesAT.
And what a time it is to go forward. Never been a better time.
I love how we've just spoken around this tweet. It's actually like great publicity for your Twitter. Go follow James.
You've probably just been coming up in people's feeds. They haven't have to seek anything out this day. Mm.
And I've been your host, Ewan. You can follow me on socials at Ewan_Roxburgh. Sadly, you'll find less hot takes there as opposed to James's. But thanks again for tuning in. And until next time,
he's bashing Uncharted 4.
I'm not even. That's not. Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Have a lovely time.